WATD presents Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
If it's Monday night, it's got to be Monday Night Talk with Kevin Tachi. So thanks for having me on.
Kevin, good for you to hold back and let him tell his story.
Putting the South Shore spin on politics, current events, and pop culture.
You guys are the center of the universe today, at least the political universe.
I believe both of you are from the area. Marshfield guys, yes, no?
Correct, yeah.
That's right.
There's only one person not from Marshfield in this room right now. And it's you.
It's me. I'm the outcast.
Well, you've always been generous with the time. I appreciate it very much.
Well, I'm honored to be on your show tonight, Kevin, with that impressive lineup you have.
I believe our guest that we've been waiting for, Congressman Stephen Lynch.
Kevin, good to join you.
The governor of the Commonwealth,
very
Charlie
good.
Baker. You ready?
I got to tell you that it was really nice to hear Aerosmith on the intro there.
You're going
to
be the rock and roll governor?
I don't know about that, but...
We have Mayor Joe Sullivan joining us. Sir, how are you?
Well, Kevin, very good to be with you again.
Dr. Drew Pinsky. Dr. Drew, are you there?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Mr. Ming Tsai, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, thanks, Kevin.
Massachusetts State Auditor Suzanne Bump. Hello, Auditor. How are you?
I am fine, and I'm delighted to be with you this evening.
And now, your host, Kevin Tachi.
Welcome and good evening. You are indeed tuned into Monday Night Talk. This is your Thanksgiving week edition of Monday Night Talk. Now, we're not going to sit down and talk recipes or anything like that. We got a lot of great guests and a lot of great topics to get to, but a common thread throughout with my different guests. We'll make sure that we somehow find out either what our guests are thankful for or what they'd like to see in a Thanksgiving meal, some of their particular favorites. So we'll look forward to talking with our guest about that. What is the lineup this evening? I'm glad that you asked. We start things off with the State House report right after traffic. As you know, State House report usually will feature an assortment of state representatives and state senators who serve here on the South Shore. And we have a number of them that do regular visits to pop in and talk about some of the things that they are working on, either up at the State House or within or for their particular districts. And so joining us today is State Representative Stephen Tsaros. Steve's stopping by to talk with us about a couple of different things. First, an update on Nero's bill. Where does that stand? I believe that the State Senate has since approved it, and it should be moving on over to the House. We'll chat with him also about what's going on with the Cape Cod bridges. Are those going to be replaced? And then again, as I said, we'll chat with him a little bit about Thanksgiving and get his take on that. Following the representative, we have premier sponsor and good friend Peter Brown from Tunney and Sons will stop by. And we'll find out some of the great things that are happening in and around the South Shore for activities. If there's somebody who has their finger on the pulse of things that are, whether it's events or things that local organizations or chamber of commerce are doing, Peter is very apt at sharing that information so that other folks can be in the know. So we look forward to that. Our number two, we'll speak with Brockton City Councilor. He is currently the council president, Wynn Farwell. We'll get a chance to catch up with him since he got reelected to another term on the city council. But we'll also talk about a couple of other things, including what's going on with the public safety campus and some infrastructure improvements. And so we'll get that from him. And then to close things out, we will chat with some folks from the Massasoit Theater Company as they're looking to present World War II Radio Christmas. We'll speak with the producer of that program, Mark Rochetel, along with Adam Joy and CJ Haw, and we'll get details about that particular show. So that's all coming up in just a couple of moments, but right now, time for us to turn our attention to what is happening out on the roadways, being brought to you by Brendan's Smoke Shop, online at brendansmokeshop.com. Several locations: Plymouth, Pembroke, Brockton, Wareham, Raynham, Taunton, Stoughton, New Bedford, Weymouth, and now Hudson, New Hampshire.
Hey, it's Jeff from Brendan's Smoke Shop. I know a lot of companies out there are having a hard time filling their positions. Well, we're not one of them. We don't have any positions because our squad is full. My people came right back to work after quarantine, and they've been here ever since. Vax, no vax, my people don't care. They love what they do, they love doing it for you, and I love them for it. Brennan Smoke Shop is a small, family-owned and operated chain. My employees are my family. We're the Brennan Smoke Shop family. This year, a special super-duper happy Thanksgiving to Chris, Mike P., Justin, Hannah, David, Brady, Jen, Linda, Amy, Carrie, Thomas, Oren, Rachel, Kiara, Katrina, Mike M., Jane, Jess, Jackie, John Paul, Jason, Heidi, Johnny, Jeffrey, my wife Mal, Mom and Leo, and last but not least, our new addition to the squad, Joshua in Rainham. Brennan's Smoke Shop, the best smoke shop in Massachusetts and New Hampshire. Customers must be 21 years of age or older. Proper ID is required.
Find Monday Night Talk on Facebook and share your opinions. Go to 959watd.com/Monday Night Talk. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
Okay, so we cruise into the first Monday Night Talk segment. Of course, this is pre-Thanksgiving. You know, it's a couple of days before, you know, one of the major holidays that we celebrate. And it's still the State House Report. Joining us is a representative who we recently added. I want to say over the summer, we had Rep. Steve Exaros, who joined us, or as he likes to be called, Rep X. Representative, how are you?
I'm doing fantastic. Happy Monday, and looking forward to a very, very busy but also thankful week. You know, you're right. You hit on Thanksgiving. There's a lot to be grateful of.
Indeed. Well, let's not waste any time. I feel that our elected leaders' time is valuable, so we never waste it when we ask them to join us on a regular basis. I want to say the top of my pecking order with things to talk with you about is to get an update on Nero's bill. You know, this is a bill that was crafted in the wake of a fatal shooting of Shawnee Gannon, and there was a police dog that could not be treated, if I'm correct, and that you saw this as a need to be able to take care of our four-legged law enforcement friends. Where do things stand with this?
I'm glad you brought that up. That in my world is a big personal issue. I was there. I was the deputy chief of police. I sent those officers on that horrible call. April 12th, 2018, Sean Gannon was murdered by a violent career criminal. K-9 Nero was shot in the head and bleeding to death, and I was there when we rescued the dog, Nero, and no one could help him. So that had an impact on me. That's why I left the job that I loved after 40 years. It was that day. And ran for state rep, and here we are, and I love it. And the Nero bill is important to the 200 dogs that are working today. There are 200 dogs in Massachusetts working in the police field every day and night, protecting us, serving us. And as of today, you know, there's good to report that the Senate passed the Nero bill 38-0. So that's unanimous. And then now it's in the House, you know, what is where I do with Matt Moratori and Kathy Lenatra and all the good reps on the South Shore and all over the Commonwealth. We're all on board. We're just waiting to get it over the goal line. So it's looking good. It's never gone this far. So it was voted out of the Public Safety Committee, thanks to Chairman Gonzalez and Chairman Timulty, and went to the Senate. They voted it unanimously. Now it's in the House, and we will get it done as soon as we can. That's my dream. That's my goal. And I was in the State House last week, the People's House, and I brought my K-9 Nero with me. And I handed these out, you know, to as many of the reps that I could, including the Speaker of the House, because it's important to the dogs that are working. It's important to the 18,000 police officers that are protecting and serving us every day. Those dogs and their handlers need to know that if they're injured, that we're going to take care of them.
When do you anticipate a possible discussion on the floor and a vote?
Great question. You know, there's so many other things going on, the ARPA funding, you know, there's always other issues, but, you know, we'll be relentless to make sure it comes up as soon as we can. I'm hoping before the end of the year, but if not, you know, right after, but as soon as possible, let's get this done and let's show those animals and their handlers that we love them and we respect them and we'll take care of them.
We'll definitely look for an update on your next appearance.
Yes, sir.
Holiday. Probably the other one of the other, I think, top items is in regards to the two Cape Cod bridges and
yes.
the discussion about replacement of those. Where do things stand with that? And does ARPA play a role in this?
It does. Yeah, great question. So, you know, for me, this is my 10th month of being a state representative. The bridges have been an issue for so long. And I just sat in on a meeting with Mass DOT on Tuesday night. So I know the latest. The latest is, you know, they need to get the commitment of the funds. You know, it's a billion-dollar project. So with those federal funds coming, that's a done deal. You know, Massachusetts is getting, you know, a lot of money. But we have to make sure some of it goes to the bridges because, you know, everybody in Massachusetts would like a piece of it. You know, our roadways and our bridges need to be fixed. And we have skilled workers in the Commonwealth, labor unions, and all kinds of incredible workers that want to do these jobs. And we're going to get them done. So my job is to work with the Senate, you know, the federal senator, Senator Markey, Senator Warren, Congressman Keating, and the Cape delegation to, you know, ensure that some of that money comes to these bridges. So where we're at is they had two public hearings this past week, last Tuesday and last Thursday. They're ready. The DOT is ready, but they just need to get the commitment that the money's there. And then they'll start to show the plans of what they might look like and where they will be placed. A lot of my district, right? Sandwich and Bourne, that's my district. It affects them. You know, our house is going to be taken. You know, all those issues are still out there, but the latest is they need to know the funding is guaranteed before they can start laying things out. So I'll keep everybody posted. It's not only important to Bourne and Sandwich, but it's to all the Cape. And all of Plymouth and all the South Shore, you know, hundreds of thousands of people come to Cape Cod. Some of them go back and forth every day. And it's my job to get those bridges built and make sure they're safe for, you know, generations to come.
It's worth asking, and that is what is the price tag? And is there a construction date when this could potentially... Yeah, we could see shovels in the ground.
Yeah, great question. You know, we're talking at least $1 billion, at least $1 billion with a B. I've been told we're 5 years away at least from a shovel in the ground or a boat in the water. You know, you're going over a canal. There's all kinds of environmental issues. There's land taking. There's a lot to it. The bridges will look totally different. You know, there'll be six lanes, you know, including a bicycle path. So it's pretty cool when you think about it. You know, the current bridges are old and they do need to be replaced. You can't really fix them. If you did, it would cost more money than building new ones. And just think about it. You can't, you know, fix those bridges properly without closing them. And imagine having closed bridges. So there's a lot to it, but we're right on it, working with everybody that we should be. And I'll be happy to report next time, you know, how we're making out as we move forward.
You're just tuning in to this a special episode. You know, this is a Thanksgiving week. And so this is kind of a Thanksgiving episode of Monday Night Talk. And we are speaking with the state representative, Steve Exaris, as our guest here this evening. I want to transition to the opioid issue. I feel that COVID has we're so concerned with, should we get the shot? Should we get the booster shot? That something that, you know, was long on the battlefield was the opioid epidemic and the fight that was ongoing until, you know, the world got shut down with COVID.
It's a great point. You know, you're right. Worried about vaccines. Should we not? Mandates, wear masks, don't wear masks. All those things are important. But while we're doing that, friends of mine are dying. So this is another personal issue. You know, I was a police officer for 40 years. I come at it different. I saw people die in front of me. I helped save lives with Narcan. I've seen the pain. My next door neighbor, 20 feet from where I am at my home now in West Barnstable, 20 feet next door, 19 years old, died of an overdose. So it's worse than ever. They're saying that the pandemic has actually made it worse. So where are we at? I have several bills. One of them is a simple bill to make August 31st. Overdose Awareness Day in Massachusetts. It's a international day. We have proclamations that address it, but I'd like to make it a law, and I'm working with a lot of parents to help get that done. So that's a bill that's pending. I have another one that comes from my police background. No bail for heroin dealers. You know, heroin has fentanyl in it, and that's killing young people and older people every day. Somewhere in Massachusetts, someone is overdosing or dying. And I do not like drug dealers. And right now in Massachusetts, if you get arrested for selling fentanyl, you go to the police station and you pay a $40 fee and you walk out of the station. And you promise to be in court the next day, and that should stop. So in my opinion, we should target these fentanyl dealers that are killing people. If they get arrested, we hold them until the court can see them and examine their record and decide what to do with them. They shouldn't walk out the door. There's precedent. If you violate a restraining order for domestic violence in Massachusetts, you do not make bail. You have to stay until the court sees you. I think we should do the same with these fentanyl dealers that are killing people, including Sean Gannon, was killed and murdered by someone selling fentanyl.
You know, it's worth noting, again, you've 4 decades serving, as a police officer. As you've seen so many different things and experienced so many things, and fentanyl and heroin are just the latest in the long line of chemicals or agents for folks to feel euphoric. Does it amaze you that, you know, just when we think we have started to turn the corner when it comes to drug addiction, that something new is introduced and becomes the latest craze for folks to, you know, feel high?
It does, and I've asked that question a lot. I've been fortunate that's not part of my world, but it is in my family. You know, my family struggles with it, and I'll ask them, why would you do this? And a lot of people will tell you that they're basically escaping from something else. So though that ties in behavioral health issues, it ties in with addictive personalities. I've learned a lot. So as a police officer, you know, you arrest the bad guys, and we should, because somebody needs to do it, but they need to be punished. And that's what's not happening in a lot of areas of Massachusetts. The police officers risk their lives. Sean Gannon was murdered by one of them. And a lot of times they're not punished properly, but he should be held accountable and punished if you sell this deadly drug. But the reason why people do it, a lot of times they've been abused when they were younger, or they struggle. So there's a lot to it. And another part of a future bill will be we need to get our hospitals and our these facilities to you know, hold on to these people. You know, when they come in on an overdose, right, they die and someone saved them, a police officer, a firefighter, their family member gave them Narcan. Now they saved. Oftentimes they walk right out of the hospital. So there's a movement to try to create some type of law that would hold them for 24 hours or 36 hours so they could get the help they need before they walk right out and then do it again. That just happened this weekend. Someone was in the hospital. They overdosed. They were on a ventilator. They recovered. They walked out. This is real. They shot up again and died. So, yeah, this is like you talked about. You talk about a pandemic. This is another one. And I have the energy and the compassion and drive to stop talking about some of these things and get things done. And I appreciate you asking that.
As we were closing in on the end of our conversation with Rep. Exaros, just a couple more things I got to get to. Knowing that it's the holiday season, it's the holiday giving back. You got a special initiative going on, Coats for Vets.
We do. Thanks to Mass Military Support Foundation and Cape Cod Military Support Foundation, mm-hmm. the New England Patriots, Ocean State Job Lot, Home Depot. We're part of this program that I've been for 5 years, where we have thousands of winter coats, brand new winter coats, brand new gloves, brand new hats, brand new hand warmers to give to veterans, military families, people in need. The public helps by buying the coats at Job Lot. That's part of that program where they pay $40 for the coat. They get $40 back to spend. We get the coats. They're at Joint Base Cape Cod here in my district. And thanks to all kinds of people, volunteers, elected officials, we hand them out during this period because it's getting cold. And these veterans and military families, they've sacrificed for us, including my own son, killed in combat in Afghanistan. So we're going to do everything we can to put a warm coat and a pair of gloves to these veterans that need them. So that's called Coat for Vets. Reach out if anybody needs anything like that. It's important that we take care of our vets.
Well, final questions from me, and these could be probably some of the tougher questions that I've asked you so far during this
conversation,
Rep. X. Thanksgiving plans. Anything special?
Just to be with family. I'm so grateful to be with family and friends, especially when you see what goes on and you see the struggles that go on. We should be thankful. We should stick together as one. It's not a Democrat, Republican, really world. We're Americans, and we need to be grateful for our freedom and sacrifice. So Thanksgiving means a lot to me.
Thanks. Rounding the corner, you sit down at the Thanksgiving table, you see a spread. What would you say would be your favorite side or sides when it comes to a Thanksgiving meal?
Okay, I got two thoughts. One is mashed potatoes. I love like real mashed potatoes. And the other is stuffing. My mother, God rest her soul, a good Greek woman, she used to make the greatest stuffing with hamburg and chestnuts and really beautiful. So my family knows the recipe, and I look forward to, I would say, homemade mashed potatoes and that special stuffing.
Okay. Final question from me, or one of my final questions. No great meal is complete without dessert. What is the quintessential dessert that you have to have to make it a perfect Thanksgiving dinner?
That's awesome. Well, I think of all American apple pie, homemade apple pie, the crust. I love it. And I think of pumpkin pie, especially at Thanksgiving. And somewhere I got to fit in Twizzlers. I love Twizzlers candy. I love red licorice, black licorice. So for me, it would be that turkey, the stuffing, the gravy, homemade apple pie, some pumpkin pie, and some Twizzlers as I watch the rest of the football game.
So as we wrap this up, and again, I thank you for being accessible. I thank all of our South Shore representation for making themselves accessible for this particular segment, the State House Report. If you have constituents who want to reach out to you, want to find out information like what are your office hours, how can they do that?
Great point. You have great people on the South Shore. I love being part of it. I have part of Plymouth. I love it. Love that area. A lot of energy, and I love it. And I'll be looking forward to seeing everybody soon. reach out to me. Facebook is one way. I have 10,000 followers. So State Representative Stephen Exaros on Facebook, 10,000 followers. Call the office at the State House. Email us. Email is very good because that keeps track of everything. That would be Stephen, S-T-E-V-E-N dot Exaros, X-I-A-R-H-O-S, at mahouse.gov.
Representative, thank you so much for joining us this holiday week. And may you and your loved ones have a safe and special Thanksgiving.
Amen. Right back at you and everybody out there. God bless America and all those who serve and defend her.
Amen. We are going to step aside, but I promise you, more Monday Night Talk in just a few moments, right here on 95.9 WATD.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
McGuigan's Pub is an upscale Irish pub with all the class of a Boston pub. The menu offers favorites like steak tips, fish and chips, meatloaf, as well as burgers, sandwiches, and pizza. The relaxed, comfortable atmosphere at McGuigan's makes it the perfect place to eat, drink, and socialize with family and friends. New hours are Tuesday through Thursday, 4 to close, Friday through Sunday, 11:30 to close. McGuigan's Pub is at 546 Washington Street in Whitman, with the full menu available at McGuigan'sPub.com.
Hi, welcome to Furniture Depot. And you, come on in.
Couches are flying off the floor at Cheyenne's Furniture Store.
Sarah, can you go over to dining sets, please?
She needs more sales associates before shoppers take their seats elsewhere.
Can somebody get me a price check on trundle bits?
Indeed can help her hire great people fast.
I need Indeed.
Indeed you do. Instant Match instantly connects you with quality candidates whose resumes on Indeed match your sponsored job description. Visit Indeed.com/credit and get $75 towards your first sponsored job. Terms and conditions apply.
Dell's Black Friday event has arrived, and it's the perfect time to step up your creativity. With incredible savings up to $400 off PCs, it's Dell's biggest sale of the year. Get more into what you're into with the latest XPS and Alienware systems featuring Intel Core processors. Save on top monitors, docks, and accessories, all with free shipping, plus low monthly payments from Dell Preferred Account. Call 800-BUY-DELL for Black Friday deals. That's 800-BUY-DELL.
Follow Monday Night Talk on Twitter. Start at 959WATD.com/Monday Night Talk. And don't forget to add hashtag Monday Night Talk to your tweets. And now, more Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
Okay, and we go from speaking with the state rep, Stephen Exaros, to speaking with a premier sponsor of Monday Night Talk, good friend and Uber community guy, Peter L. Brown joins us. Peter, how are you, sir?
How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. Thank you for taking your time. But I know Thanksgiving week is a busy time, so I thank you for joining us. But I know that you have your finger on the pulse of a lot of things that are going to be happening in the next couple of weeks leading up to the holiday season. So I thought I would give you an opportunity to kind of share some of those details as you know them. But also, being a good friend, I wanted to give you a chance to share some of your secrets when it comes to Thanksgiving. Not so much secrets, but just kind of, as a friend, talk a little bit about Thanksgiving. But we'll do that at the end of our segment.
Okay.
Although, just so you know,
before you get started, I went to my first Thanksgiving parade on Saturday.
Really?
I've never been to the parade live.
What was it like?
It was amazing. My wife even loved it.
Really? Did you bring the cast?
Yeah, she came with me. Yeah. Yeah. We sat in the main grandstand and everything.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's almost like you're like a VIP.
I don't know what happened. I was like, I got in the right line or something. It was cool.
Well, I teased the thought of talking about Thanksgiving. And are you actually going to be taking part in a trot on Thanksgiving night?
Yeah. Listen, so I just became a board member over at the Marshfield Boys and Girls Club. And they have this called a turkey trot that they do from 7:30 to 10:30. And it's presented by Mount One Bank. And it's amazing. It's going to be my first time volunteering. So Jim Bunnell said to be ready.
Now, Jim Bunnell, is he not the same gentleman who once was a part of the Talk Information Center?
That is correct. That is correct. Yeah.
And so what is the idea behind the Turkey Trot this year?
So the Turkey Trot is to raise funds for all the programs for the Boys and Girls Clubs in Marshfield. They usually have like between 150 to 250 runners. And everybody gets a pie that at the end of the run that participates from Roche Brothers. It's a 4-mile loop that goes from Southford to school, goes around Southford to school in Marshfield. And it's and if you want to bring your dogs, it's dog friendly.
Okay. Yeah. Now, I believe that there is a fee to enter.
Yes, they have to go to bgcmarshfield.org/turkeytrot. And it's all on the website. Or they want to go to the Marshfield Boys and Girls Club Facebook page. It explains everything. It's pretty simple.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the other thing, you mentioned that this is going to be very dog friendly, which is
dog friendly. Yeah. So I was showing you, I don't know, this is a visual, but we're on the radio. Tiny Incense has a new walk poop bag giveaway. We're going to have some of those at the Turkey Trot, so whoever participates will get some of these.
That's clever.
It is.
I don't know if it's as clever as some of the signs they see for people who are looking to actually come to somebody's home and pick up animal waste.
One of my employees says the guy that comes in, charge him $50, and he goes around the back of the yard, cleans it all up, takes him about an hour and a half, and he says it's incredible.
Really?
Yeah, but see, I have cats, so it's like you just change the box once in a while.
Oh my God, that's fantastic.
That's why we don't have kids, because I always tell my mom, if I could lock the kids down cellar and they would do it in a litter box, I would have kids in a heartbeat. But that's probably not good to say on the radio.
No, it's not good to say on the radio. knowing that you're also somebody who is a fantastic individual when it comes to the business community here on the South Shore.
Yes.
Yep. If you would be kind enough to let folks know about an upcoming ribbon cutting that's going to be taking place in the region.
So the Pembroke Chamber is helping this new business in Duxbury called Salter Area 1. It's a hand harvested sea salt from the Duxbury Harbor. So we're going to have a ribbon cutting on December 1st. And the place is incredible. I didn't know different flavors of salt and what they use it for cooking and stuff. I thought it was pretty amazing. So Patrick O'Connor is going to be there. Josh Cutler's going to be there. Catherine Lenatra. If they want to learn about that, they can go to our website, pembrokechamber.org. I'll go to our Facebook page, and we're going to be sending out emails and sharing that the next couple of weeks so people will know about it. And it's going to start at it's going to be on December 1st. It's going to be at 2:00.
And it's hand-harvested sea salt.
Sea salt, yes. Yep.
That's amazing.
I thought it was pretty cool. I'm very excited about it because there's a similar business in Scituate that's just opened, but called this, is it what, the Salt Cave, is it?
Yeah. Can I tell you a story? Can I tell you a story?
Yeah.
Actually, so my missus, a couple of weeks ago, asked, it was like on a Thursday or Friday, she goes, do you have anything planned for Saturday night? I'm like, no. She goes, all right, well, I'm going to plan an excursion. I'm like, uh-oh, what does that mean? So we ended up going to a salt cave in Scituate, right down the street from, we actually went to a restaurant in the area as well. It's great. I mean, it's right down the street from TK O'Malley's and, you know, all the different places in the area.
Right.
But initially what we did was you go in, you first off, you got to take your shoes off and you go into this little, room that has Himalayan salt. Now you're going to laugh, but let me tell you, it was pretty gosh darn cool to kind of go in there and just, you go into a zero gravity chair and you relax for 45 minutes It's actually kind of amazing. You've never done it?
No, but that, it doesn't sound like you can eat it.
No, I don't think the idea is for you to eat it, but again, the idea is to be able to go in and relax and enjoy it. And it's like it's called the Situate Salt Cave. Salt and soul.
That sounds awesome. But this one here, Emily Cimarron, is the owner of this. And it's in 403 Duxbury Street in Duxbury. Okay. I mean, 403 Washington Street, Duxbury. And I was just reading Shop the Sea Salt, looking online. And they have different packages and different salt samplers that you can buy. Oh. And I'll tell you, some of the different salts, like I have to be careful, like you and I will get to that age, we have to be careful how much salt we put on.
Yeah.
And this is awesome because a lot of it's got a little bit of flavor, like garlic flavor or different blends in it. So when you know how we used to shake the salt all over, get that crazy pile on there. Yeah. Now you don't have to do it. You just put a pinch of this stuff on it. It's awesome. And it's incredible. And I'm reading the story about how they started. And it's just going to be, I'm looking forward to this. Really good. Just so you know.
I do want to just mention also, I went to the Hibernia Tavern, which was like right across the way from the Situate Salt Cave, which again, it was very, very, very relaxing. So not to take anything away from you. And folks, if you're just tuned in, it's not just two people just talking about salt. I'm joined by Peter Brown, who is not only is he somebody who is he's in touch with what's going on with the business community. He is member to a couple of different chambers of commerce.
Yeah.
He sits on various boards, and we have him on from time to time. And he's a generous sponsor of this radio program, which makes it very, very possible. Is that correct?
Yes. This year are my number one program.
Okay. Now, I also want to make sure we take a moment before we get to the main entree.
We're still talking about Salteri One.
No. We're going to talk about... No, don't we want to talk about...
She has a cookbook.
No,
sir. And recipes. Oh, yeah. It's pretty cool. I can't wait to go shopping. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was going to ask you, well, do we not want to promote the Pembroke Tree Lighting on Sunday the 5th, December?
Yes. Yeah. So Sunday the 5th, they have the Pembroke Tree Lighting, which goes from 3 to 6. It's right at the new right in front of the recreation center. There'll be all sorts of stuff going on, cookie decorating, story time, balloon animals, 401's dog agility performance, craft for kids, frozen characters will be on site, ornament making, temporary tattoo table, which I love, and the live nativity scene, which is really awesome because I got in trouble the last time I went. I went to the cookie decorating. So it's like one for me, one for the sheep, one for me, one for the sheep. And you're not supposed to feed the sheep cookies. It's a bad thing to do. So I'm not allowed to do that. And then they're going to have a performance from the Pembroke Performing Arts Theater, plus the Pembroke High School Choir and the band. So it's a pretty cool thing. Kathleen Keegan puts it on. So if you need to reach out there, you go to the website is PembrokeTreeLighting.com. Or you could just give Kathleen a call over at Real Estate Rocks.
What is it that you enjoy about going to a lot of these community events and supporting local, not only local businesses, but local artisans?
One of the things is that, when my father, when I first started working for my dad, he was involved in a lot of the local stuff. And it was just supporting the community because the community was our customers. So that kind of support, if we supported them, they would support us. And not only that, it was the supporting the kids that were coming up, our future customers that are growing up in town, supporting their art, their sports, their everything. And it's just you get a lot back from it, I think.
So I would ask you, Thanksgiving, Peter Brown, what are you thankful for?
Thanksgiving? I'm thankful.
Yeah, what are you thankful for this holiday season?
I'm thankful that we survived through COVID. I'm thankful that we're going to see all our family again. I'm thankful for being able to get out to do the networking events and these turkey trots and the tree lightings and just being involved. It was hard. I mean, that whole year just being stuck inside was pretty tough. But we've all been vaccinated, and our friends are starting to get vaccinated. The booster's up for everybody. It's just time to get on with life and start enjoying it.
The thing that I want to ask you, because during COVID, especially at the height of it, you were one of the businesses, you know, we had a handful of businesses that we would have on from different, you know, whether it's folks who owned restaurants or just, you know, your regular service related businesses. And, you know, one of the things you're bemoaning the fact was is how it was affecting things and how you had to kind of, you had to be quick on your feet as a business owner to still offer services despite having limited foot traffic and knowing that, you know, we were placed under an order, state of an emergency, that we couldn't go out. You know, unless you were essential personnel, unless you needed to go somewhere, you were cautioned to stay home.
Yeah. And that's where our business model, I mean, a lot of people in the service industry changed the way they did business because you had to be more exact on times. You had the social distancing aspects of it. Negotiating people to try to get, drop it here, pick it up here, wait, not wait. But I think the positive thing that the COVID, all this COVID situation and the experience we had was it the business community rallied and tightened up and learned how to do business in an emergency situation. So now if we have that next COVID or that next hurricane or that next blizzard, we're ready because we've faced it. We know how to get through it. We know how to work with the town. We know how to work with the state. We have places and people in play for better communication. And we were still learning now. I mean, with the new uptick in it and how to circumvent it and work around it. But all in all, the communication was the key. And we found that WATD, for one, we needed it. We needed it. It's made you more viable than ever before. And our elected officials realized that they're connected more than they realize. And that communication was key for us to survive.
One of the common questions that I'm asking all my guests this evening is about Thanksgiving. What would you say is your, if you're a turkey fan, favorite part of the turkey? And second, what if you go to sit down, what do you need to see as part of the spread for a side?
Sausage stuffing.
Sausage stuffing.
I can eat that. I can eat that above anything else. My father-in-law, Al Savelmas, he's like 95, well, probably close to it. And he makes this amazing sausage stuffing. It's like a bread, a potato, spicy sausage. And it's really good. Like I can eat bowl after bowl.
And this was without eating any turkey.
No turkey, no potatoes, no vegetables. I can sit in front of the TV with a bowl of sausage stuffing and be happy.
Okay.
Now and then cinnamon ice cream will be good after.
All right, don't jump ahead on me now.
All right.
what's your favorite part of the turkey, though?
I like the white meat. Okay. Yeah. I mean, the dark meat has a specific flavor, and that you have to put a lot of gravy on. But the white meat, as long as the turkey is moist, it's good. But I'll eat anything. I'm just, as long as it doesn't have nuts in it, I can eat it. Okay. So I'll be fine.
Okay. And then the for the home run swing,
yeah.
What would be one or two of your favorite desserts to have after?
This is where all the restaurants in Massachusetts that listen to the show, you have to have cinnamon ice cream on the menu.
Really?
Totally serious. Cinnamon ice cream, plain cinnamon ice cream, nothing on it, a bowl of cinnamon ice cream. That would be your go-to thing. People would flock to your restaurants if you had cinnamon ice cream.
So So it has to be ice cream infused with cinnamon, or couldn't you just have vanilla ice cream with sprinkles?
Nope. It's total cinnamon ice cream.
Ooh.
Yeah, there's a place in New Hampshire, Lago, at the Inn at Mill Fall. I will drive from Pembroke to Meredith just to have cinnamon ice cream, and I will drive all the way back.
Ladies and gentlemen, these are some of the unknown facts of Pete Brown. And we bring them to you here on Monday Night Talk. Yeah. Pete, I want to thank you so much for joining us.
One more. If Jordan Shabbat from Speedwell is listening, cinnamon ice cream.
And hopefully he will. You can send him the podcast afterwards.
I will.
Okay. Would you like to say anything in closing, my friend?
Yeah. So, Pembroke Chamber. So, I'm back in the Pembroke Chamber. Kyle Haney's up president for next year. I'm going to be vice chair. All you small business, small, medium-sized businesses in Pembroke, reach out to me, please. We're trying to reconnect, revitalize. We have a lot of good things that are coming up in town. We need your help. So reach out and help us.
There he is. Peter Brown, a consummate businessman, somebody who cares very much about the community, especially here on the South Shore. And a little-known fact, he actually was in the VIP section of the parade in Plymouth over the past weekend. So
I told you, I was in the right seat.
You were in the right seat.
I pushed Matt Oratori aside, and I sat in his seat.
Wait. You pushed the mayor of Plymouth aside? I don't think so.
No, he didn't believe my wife was with me.
Oh, okay. Well, that does it for the first hour. We're going to step aside when we come back.
We don't have any more?
No, for the first hour, Peter.
Oh.
Okay. We're going to step aside when we come back.
Listen to the second hour.
Yeah, listen to the second hour, Peter.
Okay.
Is up next on deck, we have at-large city councilor for the city of Brockton. The one and only Wynn Falwell will be joining us.
Oh, I like him. He's awesome.
You are tuned in to Monday Night Talk right here on 95.9 WATD.
WATD FM Marshfield, WBMS Brockton. This is the South Shore's radio station, 95.9 FM WATD. Streaming online at 95.9WATD.com. And with your smart speaker, just by saying play WATD. This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
Each year, about one out of two men and one out of three women will develop cancer. But there's good news. Today's cancer survival odds are much better than 2 or even 3 years ago. Things move that fast. So if you're diagnosed, be sure to have someone in your corner who is on top of all the latest cancer treatments and techniques, the latest research, the newest equipment, all the newest medicines available through clinical trials. And speaking of corners, here's more good news. Advanced cancer care is now just around the corner. The Green Cancer Center at Signature Healthcare treats patients locally, with all oncology services and specialties conveniently housed under one roof. The center is affiliated with Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center, so you'll be seen by Harvard Medical Faculty physicians and oncologists. The Green Cancer Center at Signature Healthcare, in affiliation with Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center. Cancer has just met its match. Find out why at mysignaturecare.org/cancercare.
That truck, it pays?
What?
The bumper sticker on that truck says it pays.
Pays? Pays what?
I can't quite read it. Oh, it pays to stay way back.
Ah, what was that?
The truck! Snap back or rock! Now I've got a broken windshield.
I'm Peter Brown of Tiny and Sons Auto Glass in Pembroke. It pays to stay way back. However, if your windshield is broken, just call 1-888-64-TINIES. And thank you.
Download the Monday Night Talk podcast from iTunes for free. Just search for Monday Night Talk WATD. This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
Okay, we are back for hour number two of your special Monday Night Talk, the Thanksgiving edition, as we are just a couple of days from one of the major holidays, the tail end of the year. Joining us for this segment is none other than at-large counselor, council president, Wynn Falwell for the city of Brockton, joins us. Counselor, how are you, sir?
I'm good, Kevin. Happy Thanksgiving to you, your family, and to WATD staff. Always a pleasure to be with you.
Now, I will forewarn you that the mode for this particular show that I've asked of all of my guests to this point, there will be some tough questions about Thanksgiving, and that is, I don't know if I want to give it away, but you know what? We're going to talk about the Thanksgiving holiday for a minute or two as we wrap up our conversation. So I want to forewarn you about that.
I will let you in on a super secret in the Falwell family about Thanksgiving at the end of the program.
Good. All right. So we start off with congratulating you on being elected to a new term. As we know that earlier this month, the city held their elections, and you have been returned for another term as an at-large counselor. Congratulations, sir.
Well, thank you very much. I am in my 20th year of elected service in the city now, and I will start my 21st year in January. We'll have four new members of the council, which is pretty exciting. Two of them are coming over from the school committee, which is very helpful because they're already immersed in issues like municipal finance and public safety and the needs of the school system. And then we have two people, both of whom are minority members of our community, and they run their own businesses. David Texera runs a business in downtown Brockton, and Maria Tavares runs her business, helping people in educational endeavors. So I think it's going to be a great group beginning in January.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting. You had to have not only, you know, while they're newly elected to, you know, to the council, you know, having at least two individuals who are veterans of city government, and having folks who are also a common thread in the community, and have a well-versed understanding as to the community needs and the business needs as well.
Yeah, I think the more different viewpoints you have on the council, the better the discussions on different issues. And then when you finally come to consensus, you've combined all of the best recommendations from everyone. So as I say, for that reason, particularly having two people who already know a lot about municipal government, municipal finance, Councilor Minicello and Councilor D'Agostino will be very helpful.
And Mayor Sullivan being returned for a second term as mayor, talk to me about the dynamic of, you know, having good working relations with the mayor's office between the city council. I mean, it doesn't mean that things get rubber stamped, but if you at least have a good working relationship, things can get done, and it's for the betterment of the, you know, 100,000 plus who live within the city of Champions.
That is so true, because there is an information flow back and forth, and then there's a coordination of effort. For example, if the mayor sponsors something and it goes to council and then it goes to finance, rather than immediately put it on the next finance committee agenda, what I would do is check with the mayor's office and say, look, do you need more time to put together information? Do you need more time to have a packet prepared and disseminated out to the council members? And if the answer was yes, then I would postpone putting that on the next agenda, and I would maybe do it 2 weeks from that date. And I think that kind of cooperation just fosters a great climate for working together and understanding everyone's role.
And for you, what does it mean for you to be reelected again? And I've said this many times during our many conversations. You're somebody who has worn the different hats, from school committee to serving as mayor to now being on the city council. What does it mean for the citizens of Brockton to have faith in your work to return you back to the council for another 2 years?
Well, I jokingly said it's kind of like a massive report card. I mean, you know when you have an undertaking at school and it's going to be graded and someone is going to pass judgment on it. That's really what running for office is about once you've been in, because your record, how you voted, how you've presented yourself, that is going to be the report card is the ballot, and the people grading you are the residents. And so to be reelected, it's humbling. It's an honor. And I also think that it represents the city of Brockton well with our residents, because clearly a lot of minority residents, and we are now a minority majority city. They voted for me. They voted for the mayor overwhelmingly. I mean, he got 71% of the vote. So he has a very specific mandate to go forward, keep doing what he's doing. And I think people appreciate good government. I think they appreciate people who listen and who work at what they do. You and I have spoken many times about how this, my job is, it's work. It should be undertaken as a job that requires the best possible effort. And so that's what all of us try to do.
Well, by no means has it been an easy 2 years as having to operate a municipality during a pandemic. By no means was it easy, but, you know, finding some normalcy to still be able to govern and provide services, even if we are, you know, at one point made to stay at home, or if we do travel around, we have to wear masks, to where we are now, where things are starting to open back up. Give me your thoughts on, you know, moving forward, knowing that it's going to be a little bit of a different road to travel than the past 2 years.
It will be very different, because when the pandemic hit and the governor basically locked everything down, we were in a position that we'd never encountered before. And so what do you do? What decisions are required immediately? How do you make sure that government keeps functioning? The worst part of that was the detrimental effect it had on the schools. Kids not being able to go to school and participate in all of the programs and services we have. So if you were to ask me what was the worst part about the pandemic, other than the loss of, you know, almost 500 people here in Brockton and all of the illnesses that occurred, I would say that it was the effect it had on our public schools and children not being able to go to school and engage with the staff and see each other. I mean, we all had friends in school. That interrelationship, that socialization is so important. So, yes, we have turned the corner. I do think we need to be cautious, though. We have to watch the numbers. My fear is always that we could have another pandemic of a different strain of disease, but we are certainly much better prepared, much better.
It's interesting that you mentioned schools, and I know you're a man who's very observant and watches the news and things that are happening, and I know you pay attention to what's going on in your own community. The first is the, it seems as though it's kind of on an epidemic kind of level, and that is the angst in schools. Not only is Brockton a community that's dealing with there are regular news updates that there's some kind of violence happening in the high school, but there are other schools around the Commonwealth that are dealing with this. Give me your thoughts in regards to, you talk about, you know, coming out of the pandemic and how we could see other things kind of happen. What are your thoughts on what we're seeing with some of our youth?
Well, the first thing that worries me is social media, and I understand that there are, I don't know, I don't go on TikTok, but I understand there are different platforms that suggest that, well, this month it's slap a teacher, and the next month it's destroy a restroom, and the next month it's, I don't know, throw out books or something like that, and that is very troubling. And I, you know, maybe I'm old-fashioned, but I'm going to tell you that in my view, the most important ingredient for a successful academic career for your child in school is parenting. If the parents aren't involved, I don't care what the police department does, what the school department does, school adjustment counselors, school superintendents, school committees, somehow we have to integrate the parents into what we're doing so that when kids go home, it's almost an extension of school, that the parents are going to reinforce the importance of safety, security, learning, discipline, rules and regulations. I mean, you and I, I'm sure, have rules and regulations we don't particularly like, probably at the radio station. And, you know, it's just a function of life that we have to follow them. We have to cope with them. And in all of the publicity about what's going on in schools, I don't see any push to get parents more involved. It always seems like, well, we'll blame the school, we'll blame the police, we'll blame COVID. And I'm not so sure we're not shortchanging parents as being that missing ingredient that could really help us out.
Accountability, basically.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. I think we all have to be accountable at some point. It's easy to point a finger or blame. It's a lot harder to be accountable and go, yeah, okay, maybe I've made some mistakes in my methodology of parenting and how I allow my daughter and son to do certain things. And maybe I need to do a little bit of, you know, checking in-house checking to make sure that I'm doing it, that all I can do as a parent.
And you know, even if it's an extra 10 minutes a day that everyone's busy, a lot of families, both parents work, you're doing a great job as parents, but maybe that parenting now requires just an extra 10 minutes a day because of all of the external influences that are thrust upon our kids. I guess that's what I would summarize.
Again, if you are just tuning into this very special edition of Monday Night Talk here, heard only on, actually, I shouldn't say heard only on, because it's heard on not only 95.9 WATD, but also 1460 AM WBMS in Brockton, in the Brockton, greater Brockton area. And our guest is at-large city councilor, council president, Wynn Falwell. And we're having our regular update with him and discussion. And I teased a little bit of his political resume. Let's not forget that he's also someone who, a longtime law enforcement officer for the city of Brockton. Talking about schools and staying in that same realm, a video was released days ago in regards to an incident that took place at the high school and an officer trying to apprehend an individual who was, I don't know if he was an antagonist or was involved in the scrum, but in the manner that he's seen kind of holding the individual has kind of upset folks. And that is just kind of like a knee on the back of that individual's on that individual's back. Would you want to give your thoughts in regards to that situation?
Well, without knowing all of the details and without seeing an entire video, it is troubling to see someone face down with an officer subduing the person, because we all remember the George Floyd case. And that was a tragedy in America that should never be repeated. I guess I would say this. I am a big proponent of body cams. They are expensive, not necessarily the equipment, but the storage capacity, the software you have to purchase to download and store the videos. But I do think where everyone else has iPhones or phones that can video a scene, I think it's time to give the officers some protection and have them wear body cams so that people will get a full flavor of exactly what these men and women are facing. Because clearly, if a student has allegedly assaulted another student and or a staff member, the officer had to step in and take some action. But what he or she did from start to finish, I think, is what's really important to view. And so I hope we move towards body cams in this Commonwealth, maybe in Brockton, if the mayor and the police chief embrace that. I would certainly vote for funding for it if they reach agreement on how to do it. And that'll bring about a level of accountability, but also a level of accuracy. It's not just accountability. It's let's accurately see on video precisely what happened, what transpired from the point where the officer interacted with someone to the point where the person was taken into custody. If we don't do that, Kevin, we're going to dissuade good people from going into police work. And the number of applicants has already been significantly reduced. I'm sure you've heard that. I mean, we used to have 15, 20,000 people take the police exam, and I don't think it's half of that now.
Is that concerning as a former law enforcement officer yourself?
I'm sorry, I missed that.
I says, is it concerning being somebody who was a former police officer? Is that concerning for you?
Oh, I think it is. I think you want as many qualified, competent people applying for the positions. Then you do the background checks. You do the required interviews, and you pick the best people. And you want to pick some that have if someone's got a bachelor's degree in psychology, I'd like that person on the police department. If someone has a degree in sociology or criminal justice, clearly we'd want to recruit that person. So if we've got to support the police, but we do have to hold them accountable. I will never say that the police should have a free pass on anything. But we're getting to the point where I think we're looking at social media, we're looking at snippets of a video, and we're not presenting the full picture. And that, I think, is dangerous.
Let's move to another topic, and that it also is somewhat police related, and that is that news has come out about a new campus for the Keith Center that's I believe up on Warren Avenue. And this happens to be a parcel of land that is being considered for the new public safety center, correct?
That is correct. It's the old high school building, the one that's remaining.
Yep.
It's at the intersection of Warren Avenue and West Elm Street. And we have the Key Center there, which I think, if I'm right, has about a couple of hundred students in that special program. We always wanted to locate the public safety complex there because the fire department needs to be in a specific geographical location based on call volume. But the challenge was, where would we put the Key Center? Because we wanted those students to have the best possible education. So now we have located a facility down on Summer Street in Brockton. It's a large complex. It has a gymnasium. It has adequate parking. The city entered into an agreement with the owners to take that by eminent domain, but at a negotiated price. And so the Key Center will be moving there. It's going to greatly enhance the programs and services that we offer. And it will now open up that area for a new public safety campus at Warren Avenue and West Elm Street. And that's pretty exciting. I mean, that's going to transform the downtown.
What are we looking at as far as a time frame, knowing that this is yet just another domino to fall in that process? What's next in regards to not only relocating the Keith Center, but then starting the process of, I don't know if you need to procure that land. Is that something? Is that Keith Center land something that's already owned by the city, or is there more work being done right now?
That is already city-owned land. The time frame for moving the Key Center, I don't know. I would defer to the school superintendent on that. Yeah. I think the public safety complex is proceeding along as it should, with design, final evaluation for space needs within the building, because it will house four different departments, the central fire station, the police department, information technology, and Brockton Emergency Management. I think you would probably see maybe bids issued in, maybe by next May or June of 2022. And I wouldn't be surprised to see the building completed by summer or fall of 2023.
And that's definitely fantastic news. Definitely.
It will change the traffic pattern, too. That's one of the other, it isn't a holdup, but it's another major consideration, is changing Warren Avenue to two-way traffic so that the fire department, when it exits the building, will be able to travel in the direction needed to get to a call.
Right. So it could go north or south and not necessarily just south.
That's correct. Okay. That's it. Yeah.
All right. A couple more things as our time is winding down here. It goes fast when you and I are talking.
And
I feel it flows effortlessly, but you know, this, we try to at least share so much information that's going on when we have you on. One of the things that you and I had talked about prior to the start of our segment here was some infrastructure improvements, some things that the city has done to not only to borrow some money, but also to kind of free up some capital as well. I guess the city has borrowed money in regards to its unfunded pension liability?
That is correct. The chief financial officer, along with the City of Brockton Retirement Board, identified our unfunded pension liability. And as you evaluated the current loan rates to borrow, we decided that we would borrow at a very attractive rate, $300 million, and it will completely address our unfunded pension liability. And it also frees up approximately $22 million that was appropriated this year for our pension responsibilities. So that money is being transferred into a couple of supplemental reserve accounts. All told, it really solidifies the city as having a much stronger financial base. Coupled with $35 million in ARPA funds, American Rescue Plan Act funds, and I'm sure some funds that will come down from this most recent infrastructure bill that Congress passed, I think we're poised to begin January 2022 with opportunities to do a lot of infrastructure improvements. As you know, we have aging water mains, sewer mains. A lot of the counselors have done great work on getting infrastructure improvements. Road reconstruction is badly needed. So, for the first time, I'm going to say in 30 years, the mayor and the council really have an opportunity to spend money wisely and have a direct impact on the quality of life for our residents.
It's quite the far cry from 4 or 5 years ago when the city was, cutting the budget to the bone and not knowing where they were going to be able to get additional money, whether it was for education or for infrastructure work. And knowing now that there could be some additional relief, and that's something that can be pondered as to the best way to apply it, I think is fantastic news.
Yeah, well, I mean, we're literally going from, and this is no hyperbole, we're literally going from survival to creativity. We can now at least think a little bit about what are the important projects and undertakings that we'd like to make and have at least some idea that we can fund them.
Probably one of my last municipal questions that I would ask you, and that is yourself. Do you feel that you're a goal-oriented person? Do you see setting goals for the next term that you'd like to see either yourself or you'd like to see the council be able to achieve by the end of either 2022 or by the end of the term itself?
I think over the next 2 years, I don't think you'll get it done in 1 year. I'd like to see the council and the mayor work on code enforcement to clean up our neighborhoods, our business areas, make sure that everyone is adhering to the ordinances and the laws and regulations that we need. I'd like to see the city cleaner. I'd like to have literally a ward by ward program where we'll have street sweepers out and we'll clean up the neighborhoods, the roadways. But the major thing, I think, will be the cooperative effort between the council and the mayor to spend the money that's coming in, do our infrastructure improvements. We have residents that have poor water pressure in their area. We have other residents whose streets have not been reconstructed for 40 years. And all of that, I think, detracts from not only their home values, but also the quality of life in neighborhoods. And we'll obviously continue with public safety improvements and staffing of the police and fire departments. I mean, that's just a given. But I think this pool of money that's coming in, this financial flexibility, is really going to allow us all to be creative.
And we're speaking with at-large counselor for the City of Brockton, Council President Wynn Falwell. Any major plans for the upcoming holiday in a couple of days, Thanksgiving? What does the Falwell household like to do to celebrate such a prestigious holiday?
Okay, so this was not the super secret Falwell family issue that I was going to bring out, but I will. My mother and father were cooks at Wellesley College before the college privatized and hired a firm to come in. So all my life, I basically watched both of them cook. So I happen to be someone who thoroughly enjoys doing most of the meals, the holiday meals. So I'll be up at 4:30, 5 o'clock on Thanksgiving morning, whipping up the stuffing that bird, roasting it breast down for the first hour and a half, 2 hours, then flipping the damn thing over and trying not to spill it on the floor and getting it back in the pan and then basting it again. And so my plans are to thoroughly enjoy cooking for about 12 people and seeing all of them enjoy what's presented to them. And I do that at all the major holidays. It just gives me a great deal of satisfaction, and it's an output for my creativity.
Here are the tougher holiday questions I'm going to ask you.
Okay.
What would be Counselor Falwell's favorite one or two sides that have to be a must when it comes to a Thanksgiving spread? You're getting ready to sit down with these 12 people. What is essentially on that table because it's one of your favorites?
Okay, I have to have mashed potato with gravy, and I also have to have jellied cranberry sauce. Ooh. I do not want the cranberry sauce that kind of has the whole berries in it. I want the jellied cranberry sauce. It's just something that's been a tradition since I was old enough to remember.
Final question from me regarding Thanksgiving. Favorite Thanksgiving dessert?
All right, now this is the super secret Falwell problem, which people will probably wonder what the hell is going on here. I have to have lemon meringue pie. I not only buy one, I buy two lemon meringue pies, along with apple, along with blueberry, you know, the traditional pies. But for whatever reason, I just have to have, and I've got enough other guests coming that love it. For Thanksgiving and Christmas, we will have two lemon meringue pies from Weiss Pastry here in Brockton. And I will arm wrestle anyone who doesn't at least leave me a quarter of one of those pies.
And finally, what are you thankful for?
I am really thankful for the love of my family. You know, when you walk through the door every day, particularly if you had a bad day or a trying day or politics has taken over, just to have them there, know that they love and support you, seeing the grandchildren, seeing your son or daughter. I don't think there's anything better than that.
Counselor, we want to thank you for joining us for this special Thanksgiving week program. And we wish you and your family all the best until the next time we have a chance to sit down and talk about some of the things that are going on in the great city of Brockton.
Thank you so much, Kevin. Have a wonderful holiday.
You as well. Well, we're going to step aside for a moment, and when we come back, we have one final segment right here on Monday Night Talk, heard on 95.9 WATD. Stay tuned.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
McGuigan's Pub is an upscale Irish pub with all the class of a Boston pub. The menu offers favorites like steak tips, fish and chips, meatloaf, as well as burgers, sandwiches, and pizza. The relaxed, comfortable atmosphere at McGuigan's makes it the perfect place to eat, drink, and socialize with family and friends. New hours are Tuesday through Thursday, 4 to close, Friday through Sunday, 11:30 to close. McGuigan's Pub is at 546 Washington Street in Whitman, with the full menu available at McGuigan'sPub.com.
Monday Night Talk continues all week long. Go to 95.9WATD.com/Monday Night Talk and keep in touch on Facebook and Twitter. And now, more Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
Okay, and we have returned for the final segment of Monday Night Talk. As it says, the theme has been throughout the whole radio program. It is a very special Thanksgiving week edition of Monday Night Talk. And joining us for this final segment, if you haven't put anything on your calendar for any holiday shows to check out, well, coming up on Saturday, December 4th, and Sunday, December 5th, both of these are 1 p.m. starts. Massasoit Theater Company presents World War II Radio Christmas. And joining me to talk a little bit about this. Of course, the constant, you know him, he's on, been on many, many times. He's even served as a co-host, Mr. Mark Rocheteau, who is the producer of this particular product that we're gonna, that's going to be hitting the stage. We also have Mr. Adam Joy. He is the director of said production. And we have CJ Hawes, and CJ is one of the performers, one of the actors. So we will talk with them. Folks, welcome to Monday Night Talk.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
You got it. So let's start with you, Mark. How are you?
I'm well, thanks. How are you today, Kevin?
Okay. I want to be a little cordial, you know, not just almost stiff, like, hey, let's do an interview.
No worries.
If you will, talk to us about choosing this particular production, because it seems as though this is more like it's not your typical Christmas play, like, you know, Annie or, you know what I mean? Why this?
Sure, yeah, no, you're correct. And basically, the World War II Radio Christmas is a one act. It has a bunch of vignettes and smaller plays within the play, and presented in what we would consider to be the old time radio classic style. And we picked this show mostly because it was smaller and compact, and not knowing what the world was going to do coming out of the COVID lockdown. This is actually our first show in the space. We did an outdoor performance last month, but this is our first indoor performance. And like I said, when you start to plan these, you know, a month or two ahead, at least, as we all know, the COVID world is always a moving target and always changing. And so we wanted to tread lightly, if I can say that, in regards to the weight of the show, in regards to size and girth. And so this piece seemed to be right in the call for what we were looking to do. And to be able to present something to the community, have something of substance for our actors and production staff, and then also to not have something too heavy if, heaven forbid, we had to bail out due to COVID surge.
My goodness. Well, we'll talk about that nasty C word in a moment, but COVID. Adam, if you will. I mean, how many different productions have you directed? Are you somebody who's typically, you know, an actor, or are you somebody who you like being behind the scenes and providing direction for a said production?
Certainly. Yeah. I've been fortunate to be at the helm of many productions in the past, you know, 5 to 10 years in the community. I've directed for Massasoit a few times. I'm so excited and honored to be back anytime I'm asked back to direct with Mark and Nathan and all the team at Massasoit. I just jump at the opportunity because I think they really, you know, grasp the whole community aspect of community theater, where it's just everybody working together on a, you know, a common passion, on a piece to entertain and just do the best that we can. And it's always attractive to direct a Massasoit, especially when I can work with my collaborator, Eli Bigelow, who is in charge of the music direction. So all of the singing that you'll hear, this play is not really a musical per se, but it's a radio play with a lot of singing. So you're going to get to enjoy some classic, you know, Christmas carols that you probably would expect to hear, and as well as some great musical numbers from the time period, one of which will be sung by CJ Hawes, who is, we're really excited to have in our cast.
Who happens to be amongst us. CJ, I would ask you, how is this particular production different from any others that you may have done in the past?
Yeah, great question. The biggest thing I think that's different about this one, and one of the reasons I kind of love it, is it's a show within a show. So we have the radio show that we're presenting, you know, as our characters, but you also get to see, you know, the show that's happening with the presenters. You get to see what they're doing behind the scenes, all the things, almost like Noises Off. You know, you get to see behind the curtain, you get to see what's going on. The other thing that kind of gravitated me towards this show and why I love it is I think as a Christmas show, it hits on the things that I personally find super important about connecting and reaching out. You know, it's a radio show where we're reaching out through these radio waves to people and just trying to connect with them in what is a hard time. And I think that's somewhat relatable, especially nowadays. So I'm really excited for it.
I have to say is I'm looking at the press release and I'm looking at some of the key ingredients to this particular production. And I throw this out at Adam and at Mark, and I'll go with Mark first. The key ingredient, like you're making a cake here, you need flour. Rolly Blanchett, who is somebody who has been somebody who's done many. It sounds as though you have, like, not only is he a part of this, but it's like you have an on-set advisor to said how to, you know, maybe he might be like an assistant director to Adam if there's any kind of technical expertise that's needed. Am I reading too much into the leaves here?
A little too much into the leaves, in so much as the fact that we appreciate Rolly's veteran status in regards to radio, all the radio classics that we've had over the years. He's more of an advisor to me, where he gets to share with me some insights in regards to the radio classics that we've had in the past, and how I am going about producing. The directing side is a lot more technical and more experientially based, and that's one of the reasons why I hire Adam, because I know I'm not a director, and Adam is. And so Rolly does not lean towards the directing side in that sense, because a couple of reasons. One, as I was saying, he was more when he was doing radio classics back in the day towards the producing side. And then also on the directorial side, we're approaching this as a theatrical play, and radio classics was more of approaching it as a theatrical script reading. And I think that's definitely the difference, and why I actually hired Adam, because we talked about it in the planning stages of, oh, this is a radio play. We can just do it like radio classics and get people up there in that same day. But then we thought about it, and we thought about our production value, and we were like, no, we really would like to have a director. And when I considered directors, Adam, you were the first person that popped in my brain. And I think a lot of it has to do with the redeeming value of some of the vignettes in this piece. And I knew Adam would treat those with the care that they need, you know.
How important is it to have someone who's a producer instilling their confidence in your skill set, Adam?
I think the producer is the engine that makes the show go. Without the producer, you wouldn't have anything. And the producer, like Mark, who is supportive, who's approachable, who's kind, who has so much background information as a performer, as a producer, he's a jack of all trades. He can kind of help you oversee, give guidance, support. And like I said, you know, anytime Massasoit is offering me any show, I'm always going to jump at it. And falling in love with this script, you know, like Mark just referenced, when I first read it, I was kind of like, what is this piece? And, you know, and then as we read it, I was like, oh, this is a show that's actually going to come alive. And our job is to present it in a way that honors so many different perspectives of people who were touched by World War II, from soldiers overseas to people at home, to those who maybe lost a loved one. But, you know, whether you're touched by World War II or not, it's still going to reach everyone, because it's all centered around how Christmas can overcome difficult times like World War II. And not that I'm ever going to compare, you know, a global pandemic to a major world war, but I think a lot of us are coming out of an atypical Christmas, and it's kind of a good way to kind of a roadmap, if you will, to show you that, like, as long as there's, you know, as lame as this is going to sound, as long as there's Christmas, you can kind of overcome anything. And I think that's one of the messages hopefully the audience will get from our play.
CJ had alluded to this, that there's kind of a story within a story here, kind of get to peel the onion back, per se, to kind of see it fully here. Would you say that's kind of a spot on description of this particular production?
Yeah, I think so. Like I alluded to earlier, you know, you get to see everyone come together. You get to see the people and their lives, where they're coming from, and then them put on the show to, like Adam said, reach out and connect and try and bring some Christmas joy to those overseas.
Tell us a little bit about your character.
So one of the larger characters I play, we are very lucky. A lot of the actors involved get to play multiple characters. But one of the significant characters I play, her name is Hattie, and she is a woman who actually joined the Marine Corps. So I do like kind of playing a little more bold or progressive woman for that time. And she meets a fantastic soldier named Jess. And I don't want to give too much away, but there's quite a love story.
Okay. Good. Definitely good to know. You know, and knowing that like a fun production like this, Adam, I think the one thing that the Massasoit Theater Company has always been able to do over the years, throughout the years, I will argue with anybody who wants to say differently, is when it comes to period pieces, a lot of the, not only the set designs, but a lot of the costuming is usually spot on. How important is that in this particular production?
I think it's super important. I think anytime you can, have all the elements working together as one, from set design to costume design to acting style to prop design, to have that authentic time period, it really takes the audience back. It takes them on a journey so that there's no holes. And I agree with you, Kevin. I think Massasoit does that as well, if not better than any other theater in the area. From Mark to Nathan and all the team, you know, interchangeable parts throughout the years. Those two constant gentlemen, the way they pay attention to detail, the way they're willing to do absolutely anything to make the show happen. They'll fulfill so many different roles. And I think CJ and I both love to go back to this theater because we know we're going to get that authenticity from the production staff.
Yeah, that's no knock on Company Theater. Company Theater does an amazing job. I'm sorry, I'm a little biased with Massasoit, so. There, I throw it out there.
Yeah, there's room for everybody. Massasoit doing things well doesn't mean other theaters don't do things well. I think everybody, that's what community theater is for. And we all just want to come together and celebrate the arts coming back.
Now, I'll ask you and CJ the same question. Is this one of your first performances, as we're coming out of COVID? Or have you done other productions prior to this one? Adam,
this is my first one coming out of COVID, definitely, which was a little nerve-wracking, but like we've all emphasized, the fact that it was at Massasoit and with this team, I mean, I basically ran to auditions. So but it's exciting, Adam.
Yeah, this is the first indoor. I was fortunate to participate in a couple of outdoor, just like Massasoit was. And now we're working our way back to get people back in the Buckley Performing Arts Center.
Mr. Rochadeau, I get to ask you the fun question, and that is COVID management, because being the producer, you have to kind of keep an eye on all the checks and balances to making sure that folks are safe health-wise coming into the Buckley Performing Arts Center.
Definitely. And it's been a learning curve for me. I was set on this road back in the end of August, when we talked about reopening and having to put together what is known as your COVID management plan for your facility. And basically I went to Broadway. I researched the Actors Equity Agreement with the Broadway League. We went to an international theater group that holds theater facilities all over the world. And then we talked to, actually the NJCAA Region 10, which is the area that we fall under for Massasoit, collegially for sports, because Massasoit was also considering the same COVID management plan for sports. And basically we took all the different major components from that. I looked at theaters around the region in the area, and basically made an amalgamation of the COVID management plan. And it was funny because we had presented, and as I was saying before we started, the board voted on Thursday, and I got a phone call from a patron, and it was a woman by the name of Mary from Weymouth, and she had asked me, she said, so what is Matt, what are you doing about COVID? I mean, what do you mean, what are we doing about COVID? She's like, well, no, about the theater. Like, what's the plan? And I was like, the COVID management plan. And she's like, yeah. And I told her, I said, basically what we're going to do is going to ask you for verification of your vaccine, an ID. We're going to give you a temperature check. And then when I get done with that, I'm going to put a green wristband on you. So that way everybody knows that you've been checked out and you're clear to be in the building. And she was like, well, thank you so much. And I was like, so how many tickets would you like to buy? And she goes, oh, I didn't call to buy tickets. I wanted to know about your COVID management plan. I'm going to go tell my friends and we're going to get a group together and we'll call you back and we'll put in our order. So that is very much on the minds of our patrons, is how are we vetting COVID? And I've been to productions of working facilities from Boston to P-Town since July 1. And basically everybody is asking for verification. I think maybe there was one facility that was not asking for verification of your vaccination. And it's just the way of the world. As of January 1st, Massasoit Community College entirely will be requiring vaccination for faculty, students, staff, and visitors to campus. So our sports facility and now the theater is kind of ahead of the curve a little bit. But we're just doing our due diligence and making sure that everybody has a safe experience and enjoyable experience.
Would you say that's, Adam, would you say this has been maybe one of the biggest challenges is dealing with the pandemic and the management part of this, and probably doing the stuff with the actors and has been the easy part?
Yeah, definitely. I think anytime you're at rehearsal, we're all just kind of so excited to be back in the theater. So that enthusiasm carries you through, and then just trying to keep everybody safe, you know, actors, audience, that's such a responsibility of the theater organization and Mark, and they have a really solid plan.
So I would ask you, CJ, and that is what has been the challenges of getting back to the theater, and has it been like getting on that bicycle and the first couple of pedals, you're off and ready to go?
Yeah, definitely. A lot of us were actually joking about how long it's been since, you know, we've been able to dance and practice and interact together. And I think there's, like Adam said, there's something so exciting about it. And so singing with a mask doesn't compare to being in the room with your friends and being able to perform again. You know, there are certain things that just take a back seat.
If you would, CJ, do you want to share some of the productions that you've had, you've been a part of in the past?
Sure. Top of mind, some of the ones that come to mind, I was in Beauty and the Beast. Actually, that was one of the last performances at Massasoit. I was more on the makeup side of things, but I did play Breadbasket, which was really fun. I have also been involved in Our Town, which was at MMAS, which was also directed by Adam Joy. I was in Oklahoma in Hingham with Nathan. I've been very, very lucky to work with a lot of the people in this area.
If you will, Adam, talk about how tight-knit community theater is. And, you know, everybody knows everybody, and you get to work with some of the best. You don't have to go to Boston to see some of the best shows because, gosh darn it, they're happening down here on the South Shore.
Yeah, absolutely. The talent, the commitment, and it's really bar none. You know, we have a really great cast. So many, like you said, everybody knows everybody. I think I knew almost everybody that auditioned and everybody that's got cast, you know, but then, you know, you always have those few outliers where you get to make a new friend and they get to be part of your community and become part of your, you know, community theater group and network, and hopefully keep working together and just keep doing what we love to do.
It's almost like family coming together, is it not?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I've known CJ since she was like 15 or 16. And the fact that we're back together, working together as adults is awesome.
And talk to me if you want to share with some of the folks who are part of this, this cast. You have many, and it's tough to name off everybody and you forget somebody like, oh, they didn't name you. But you know, some of the folks that you do have that are part of this cast that the folks want to come out and see.
Sure. Yeah. We are blessed to have a really talented cast. We have a cast of 17 actors, from our few child actors to all the way to a seasoned veteran like Rolly. CJ's love interest is played by Ricky DeSisto, who is a Massasoit familiar face who was in Amos. He was Amos in Chicago and Cogsworth in Beauty and the Beast. We have Emily Buckley returning to the Massasoit stage, Stephanie Wallace. You know, I can't rattle off everybody's name, but we have a really talented group.
If there's something you wanted to share with the audience as we are wrapping up our segment here, and it flew, what would you want to leave as a lasting impression for the folks who are considering getting a ticket either for December 4th or December 5th at the Buckley Performing Arts Center?
I'll grab that one first. I think for me, the thing that resonates most, I touched on it earlier, is this show is about connecting. It's about reaching out. It's about coming together in hard times. It's about the simplicity and the honesty that can exist around holidays in general. This one's Christmas specific, but whatever you might be celebrating, I think it has a great message in it. And there are so many talented people sending out that message. So that would be my biggest thing. Come relax for an hour and enjoy.
Adam, same question.
Yeah. I mean, I think CJ nailed it. First of all, that was a really good answer. I think, I agree. This show is really going to just kind of let you stop and remember the simplicity and the honesty. We're all at our best at Christmas, right? Those of us that celebrate, even those of us that don't, right? You know what I mean? I think we can all just kind of agree that Christmas is something that brings the best out of people, even in tough times like World War II or tough times that we're coming out of right now. And I think you'll see a really talented cast, you know, spread that message, make those connections, like CJ said, and hear some of your holiday favorites. And one other good thing, it's relatively short. So, you know, if you have a party to get to or it's some Christmas shopping to do, you come into the theater, support Massasoit on its way back. Mm-hmm. And then you'll be back out and enjoying your day, you know, within an hour, hour and a half tops.
Mark, you get to be the punctuation at the end of the sentence. Anything you want to add?
Well, to tie all that together, I think that to be a little more specific, I always tell folks, having come out of COVID and looking at theater, that laughter is the best medicine, you know, and there's some laughs to be had in the show and some heartfelt moments. And as Adam was saying, whether you're a celebrator of the season or not, just the spirit is infectious. And I think with that, coupled with, I think, an elevated appreciation of just coming together for those of us who've gone through COVID, I think to do that with family is all the more better. And no, what a better time to do that. At World War II Radio Christmas.
And if you, the final stitch here would be, how can they go about getting tickets for these two productions on Saturday, December 4th at 1 p.m. and Sunday, December 5th at 1 p.m.?
Sure. We have a little different process than before, as we lost our online ticketing during COVID. However, the process here is for folks to, they can call in at the number 508-427-1234 or email us, or I'm sorry, you can go to the website and there's a form to fill out. And basically what we're doing is taking reservations, and folks will, and I'll assign their seats and I'll send them an email and I'll probably give them a phone call because I'm all into holiday spirit already. And they'll get a confirmation of their seats. And when they come in, they just need to pay at the door, do their temperature check, do that whole COVID verification, vaccine verification, and they'll be good to go.
Excellent. And if you're just tuning in, oh, the show's almost over, but we've been privileged to be talking with Mark Rashto, who's the producer of this Massasoit Theater Company production, the World War II Radio Christmas, with CJ Hawes, who is one of the performers, one of the actors, and Adam Joy, who is directing this talented cast of 17. Now I'm going to really delve into some even tougher questions. Here we are, just a couple of days from Thanksgiving. What are you all thankful for? We'll start with you, CJ. What are you thankful for this Thanksgiving season?
I mean, 100% my family and the surrounding people. It's been a hard year for so many people. And I think that I'm very lucky to be able to say that I made it through with my whole family. And I am so excited to be able to share Thanksgiving with more of them this year than we were originally able to last year.